I come before you today with a great deal weighing on my heart. Life as I've known it has taken a sudden turn I never could have anticipated, and I'm not quite sure what to do or how to feel. My name is Zebedee. I live in the village of Capernaum, on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, in the Roman Empire. I'm a fisherman by trade. My hard work and determination have enabled me to oversee a small family fishing operation, and it keeps our family and our village fed for one more day. The work is continuous and demanding and lowly in class, but in these days of Roman rule, it's about as well as I can do. Figure as long as my family's fed and has a place to sleep at night, I'm content. Just keep your head down, stay busy. This is all I've ever known, and I would just assume that that would be true also for my sons, James and John. But then yesterday came along, and everything changed. See, it was just a while after sunrise, when the shade of night still lingers, but all is getting bathed in golden light. We'd been fishing for a few hours. The best catch happens at night when the fish come near the water's surface, but the problem with night fishing is you can't always tell when you're getting tangled up when you toss the nets out in the dark. So we had a few snags here and there in our nets. So by sunrise, we saw that we had some mending to do before our work was done. So we pulled the boat to the shore. We got busy, hoping to finish up in time to bring our haul to the village market. I was focused on a large hole torn through my net when John grabbed me by the shoulder and said, "Father, look." I raised my head and had to shade my eyes and squint through the sunrise. I saw the outline of three figures approaching the shore. I stood up to see who it was. As they neared the boat, I could make out the faces of two out of the three. They were young men, brothers, peers of my own boys, and they too were fishermen. There was Andrew, the older one, and his younger brother Simon. But the third figure I didn't quite recognize. He looked a bit older than the others, and there was just something about him, something about his presence. It's almost as if he was vaguely familiar, but I couldn't quite place him. My sons, however, recognized him right away. They stood up in the boat, and after a quick greeting to Andrew and Simon, they offered him a nod of respect and welcomed this third man, calling him teacher. I was caught off guard by this sudden level of reverence that they had for this stranger. After a moment, I stepped forward to offer a greeting myself, but just then, the man raised his hand and spoke. "James, John, I come to tell you what I just told Simon and Andrew. Follow me, and I will make you fish for people." Just then, I made this connection. I remember once I had heard his voice. This was that mysterious fellow from Nazareth that had just moved to our village a while back. I had seen him around, mostly in and out of the synagogue, and there was one time I overheard him talking to a small crowd. Something about this new kingdom coming close at hand. Well, I didn't really know what to make of that. The only empire I've ever known is Rome, and there's a reason I'm a fisherman and not one of those high-minded philosophy types. I didn't give it a second thought. Now, my sons, I recalled, had listened to this man a few times. They even came to me afterwards once or twice telling me how incredible he was and how he was going to change everything and make things right. Well, again, as a fisherman, I've learned it's often best not to rock the boat. And I've learned to recognize a boat rocker like this man when I see one. So then I rehashed what I had just heard. "Follow me and I'll make you fish for people." What in the world is that nonsense? I had no clue, but what I did know is that this man made me uncomfortable, especially knowing that my sons had already taken an interest in his controversial teachings. It's time to interject a little parental reality check to make sure my sons knew who was still the boss. So I cleared my throat and said in my best voice of authority, Excuse me, teacher, but I think you may have... But just then, I was interrupted by a quick pat on my back and then the clamor of ropes and splashing water. Before I knew it, James and John had both dropped their nets and hopped ashore. Hey, wait a moment, I stammered, but I couldn't even gather my thoughts in time. The five of them turned and made their way back toward the village. I called out, James, John, where are you going? But they kept on their way, no looking back. Within a few moments, they had disappeared behind the hill crest, and I was left alone. I stood in dumbfounded silence for a long while, hearing nothing but the gentle lap of waves pushed up from a south wind. Finally, I crouched back down and returned to mending my net. My thoughts flow better when my hands are busy. But this time, the thoughts came like a torrent. Who does this man think he is? Showing up in our village, uninvited, stirring up trouble, planting new ideas in the minds of our youth? Probably just some street-peddling magician, looking to make some coin with the wonder of his words rather than working to actually earn it. I bet he's not even from Nazareth. Probably came from one of the big cities. Maybe he's even a Samaritan sneaking into our land to stir up some kind of rebellion. And he's going to try to use my sons for that cause? Yeah, no, sir. Just wait until I finish here. I'm going to march into that village and set things right. My sons have a job to do, expectations to uphold to their families, to their village. They can't just leave because some outsider mystic has promised them the world. I continued to stew in my anger, forcing those nets right back together, reshaping them just as I intended them to be. Fish for people? What in the world? Eventually, I finished and returned to the village, still reeling, still heated. I decided to check that synagogue first. When I arrived, I came upon a small group that was in the midst of prayer. Now, this was a normal thing for the synagogue, and yet couldn't help to notice there was a difference in how they prayed. See, I was accustomed to hearing quick and emotionless recitation of prayers long memorized for generations. But these prayers felt alive somehow, as if they had rediscovered their meaning. One person noticed me at the door and paused to come up and offer a welcome. Right away I asked her if she had seen my sons with that man. She replied, "They were here a while ago. Your sons and two others came along with the teacher, and they invited everyone to hear him preach. He sat down among us, and he offered the most incredible words. He was calling us to turn and change and prepare for the coming kingdom. Then he told us these beautiful stories of all the ways that we can each be a part of it together and how it is going to look so much different than things look right now. It gave me hope, hope that I haven't felt in a long time." She then returned to prayer, and I left the synagogue. I'll admit that was a pretty powerful testimony, but I was still in no mood to sit and ponder and wait. I had to find my sons and set things right. I continued asking around the village, but without much success. And finally, as night was falling, I was ready to return home to tell my wife, Salome, of what had happened. Just then, though, I overheard a commotion coming from a small house nearby. I approached to see a crowd gathered around, several standing near the doorway, and so I shifted around those gathered and I peered inside. And there they were. First, I saw Andrew and Simon, standing at the front of the group, doing their best to keep everyone orderly. And then I saw my sons. They were turned away at the moment, assisting a man to get across the room. I recognized him from the village streets. He was a beggar who couldn't walk, forced to just lie in the street and ask for help day after day. Arm in arm with that man now, James and John crossed the room and slowly eased him onto a mat on the floor. And sitting next to the mat, I saw the teacher. He held the man's head in his hand and he spoke to him too quiet to hear. Well, this was it. This was my moment to do something. While I had this guy in my sights, I took a deep breath, and I pushed through the doorway and weaved through the crowd. "Excuse me," I called out. "James, John, over here." My sons looked back and met my eyes as they supported the elderly man's frail body. But just then, Andrew set a hand upon my chest. "Please, just give them a moment." I paused to watch. And then I experienced something I will never forget. The teacher, this very man who had ripped my sons from me, he did the unimaginable. He slowly began to move his hands over the frail legs laid down in front of him. He closed his eyes and he spoke quietly, maybe praying, all under his breath. Now, I couldn't tell you if this was real or just in my head, but it felt as though the whole room started to glow. And not even just the dark corners, but the entire room was bright as day. And just then I felt this sudden breeze pass through the room, and the hairs on my neck stood straight up. It was entirely surreal. In a moment, things faded back down to normal, and I started rubbing my eyes, trying to get back to my senses. But then as I looked up, I saw that same man, that same beggar standing alongside my sons. This time nobody held him up. This time he raised arms and praised God, laughing and crying all at once. And John laughed and cried with him, guiding him aside as James crossed the room to find who was next. He came near me. "James," I said, "what is this? How is this happening?" And he responded, "Father, he called, and we had to answer. He is going to change everything, and we can help." I took a moment to look around the room and just realize how all sorts of people had gathered. Jews, Gentiles, Greeks, Romans, women, men, children, poor laborers, wealthy traders. James saw me looking and he smiled. "He casts a wide net, doesn't he? Thing is, though, his nets don't need mending." Well, he snuck a laugh out of me that time, and then he proceeded to find the next person in need of healing. I remained for a while into the night. I witnessed a few more of these miraculous healings. I eventually learned of the teacher's name, Jesus. And I even found myself offering a few prayers of my own, something I hadn't done in quite a long time. And I watched my sons continue to usher folks in and out. And I saw in them a spark of passion and purpose that I had never seen before. And the anger and the fear that I'd been latching onto began to melt. I left that night with a strange mix of emotions. In Jesus, my sons have been swept up in something new and exciting, something I don't really understand, but something they know to be important. And it's something bigger than fishing, bigger than Capernaum, and I've no doubt that this good news is going to get shared well beyond the Sea of Galilee. But that means I'm going to be left without them, at least for now. I'm going to have to sacrifice my desire to have them by my side on my boat. And I know that's going to be hard. Yet I can't stop them. I dare not get in the way of whatever good is coming from this Jesus. If he's called my sons, then surely they'd better follow, come what may. And now today, after a night's sleep, I suppose that's all I can leave you with. Just because we don't fully understand something, it doesn't make it wrong. This Jesus, this God-given teacher and healer, is making God's presence known to us, even here and now. This Jesus seeks to gather us together, to give us hope, to offer us restoration. He's planting seeds of this new kingdom in our hearts, and it's going to grow from within And it needs to take priority over every other kingdom or empire or nation that we're a part of. And though the task may be difficult at times, we are each called to make changes and to offer sacrifices to be a part. And the good news is that it seems this Jesus is determined to come alongside us and experience it with us. What a gift from God. We dare not keep our heads down and our hands busy with whatever it was that we knew before. If Jesus says follow, we'd better do it. Even if it means rocking the boat. Amen.